Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour, an editorial briefing. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying about $7,650 of that in Social Security taxes. Then, on top of that, you pay a 17% income tax on $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500. Now, that means that you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. Now, that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3%, boys, that's been advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we've been talking about hospitals. Now, hospitals are great places, and hospitals do miraculous things. I mean, you can get shot on the streets of Washington, D.C. with a .45 right through your chest. You can be dead, and they can load you in an ambulance, haul you off to the hospital, revive you, and patch you up, and you can walk out of there. Now, that's a miracle. Out on the battlefield of Iraq, they've got battle casualties out there, people who in World War II would have just been given up for dead. And they're bringing those boys back, and they're patching them up, and they're fixing them. And the people that are doing that are called allopathic medical doctors. I mean, those guys, you know, think about it for a minute. You can have a tumor in your lung. They can take you into the hospital. They can cut your lung out. Well, not both of them, but one of them. They can cut one lung out. And you can get up and walk out of that place with one lung. You'll be called a one-lunger. That's a miracle. They've gone a step further than that. They can take somebody else's lung and put it in your body. And you can get up and walk out of the hospital. Well, not very well. And you won't last very long, but the mere fact that that can be accomplished, the mere fact that you can do that is miraculous. You know, modern medicine, if you stop and think about it here, is phenomenal. It is a modern miracle. Now, at the same time, you know, there's an upside and there's a downside. You know, there's two sides to every coin. There's heads and tails. There's up and down, right and left. And we take a look at the medical establishment over here as to what it was 50 years ago, and then we criticize it. And I've been criticizing the medical establishment now for a couple, 3 days. And so, to be perfectly fair, well, you know, halfway perfectly fair, and we have to give credit where credit's due. Now, in America, if you get sick, this is the best place on planet Earth to do it. Because we've got better drugs and more of them. And we've got better hospitals and more of them than anybody else in the world. And America, for sick people, is the mecca of the world of bad health. I mean, if you're sick, this is the place you want to be. I mean, if you've got AIDS in Africa, you're dead. If you've got AIDS in America, they can keep you alive for another 5 years. They've got miracle drugs over here now, and they can keep you alive. They can't save your life now if you've got AIDS. You're going to die, but you're going to die 5 years later than the guy in Africa. Now, that's a step in the right direction. Now, because of that, we have made modern medicine kind of like a god. The hospital is the temple, and life in our communities revolve around our temples. We have our legal temples, political temples, and we have our medical temples. And these medical temples have some problems, and that's what I've been bringing to your attention. For instance, I brought up to you that more people die in hospitals, more people in America die in hospitals than would die in two 747 crashes every day, 7 days a week, 30 days a month, 365 days a year. Remember that number? Well, there's a couple of more numbers you got to get in mind. Because if you're concerned about your son or your daughter or your husband or brother in Iraq, you can put your mind to ease. Put it to rest. If you've got somebody over in Iraq, in the war zone, in downtown Baghdad, he's safer in Baghdad than you are in the hospital. That's right. Safer than in the hospital. You see, here in America, we kill 130,000 people a year from iatrogenic disease. Iatrogenic means it's doctor-induced. The doctor cut the left lung out, but it was the right one with the tumor in it. And you say, well, that doesn't happen very often. Oh, yeah, happens 130,000 times a year, and 130,000 people die. And that's what they admit to. It's probably two or three times greater than that, but that's what they admit to. That's what government studies show. That's your tax dollars at worth, called at iatrogenic. hydrogen. I won't try to spell it for you. You just have, you're on your own there. Then there's a second way they kill you. It's with drugs, not illegal drugs. We're not talking about crack or meth. We're talking about the legal drugs that come right out of GlaxoSmithKline. They kill 100,000 a year by prescribing the wrong drug for you. Or they gave you the right drug, but in the wrong amount. That's called death by decimal. So drugs, they don't kill quite as many as with iatrogenic, but they kill a bunch. It's 100, it's 100,000 a year. 100,000. 130,000 by cutting out the wrong lung, and 100,000 by giving you the wrong drug after they cut out the wrong lung. And then infections get another 75,000. So I added the three together, got iatrogenic drugs and infections. It's 305,000, 130, 175. That's 300,000 people a year. Then I divided that, took my famous Sharp E1197G3, and I divided it out. And if the calculator's correct, that's 821.91 people die every day in America. I'm not talking about every year or every week, every month. I'm talking about every day. That's equivalent to 2 747 jumbo jets carrying 410 people each, crashing, burning, everybody killed every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 30 days a month, 365 days a year. Now, when you compare that to Iraq, we're only killing 4 people a day in Iraq, and Katie Couric reports on those 4 guys every day, and McNeil Air, they come out and they give you their pictures, names, addresses, ranks, and pictures, and where they came from. Well, not every day, but, you know, twice a week. Now, boys and girls, if you're an American soldier and you're over in Iraq and you're just singing the blues over there saying, oh, God, I just can't wait to get home, you want to remember that you're safer in Iraq than you are in America. You're safer in Iraq on the streets of Baghdad than you are in your local hospital. So if you mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers are worried about your loved ones over in Iraq, put your mind at ease. They are safe over there. Furthermore, here's another little number for you. If you were to take the number of people over in Iraq that are being killed every day, it's about 100 a day, 36,500 a year. Then that's the outside max. That's what they're telling us if you add in all the Iraqis. Now, see, we Americans don't count you Iraqis because you don't count, evidently, because on the 6 o'clock news, we don't report. We don't know how many of you Iraqis are getting killed every day, but we know how many Americans are getting killed every day. So my only conclusion is Iraqis don't count. But there are some groups around the world that are keeping track of it, and they're telling us that in the course of the war, 4 years of war over there has killed 600,000 Iraqis. President Bush said that that's a lie, but, you know, I don't know if I could believe President Bush or not. You know, Bush ain't exactly, you know, the paradigm of truthfulness, you know, in my view. But anyway, President Bush said, nah, it ain't that many, but I'm just going to be the devil's advocate here and say, well, suppose for the sake of our discussion that they did kill 600,000. Well, listen, if you killed 600,000 Iraqis in 4 years, that's 150,000 a year. It's a bunch, but, you know, it's 150,000. Now, divide 150,000 people a year by 365 days, and that comes out to 410 per day. 410 a day. Now, they're telling us they're killing 100 a day. Well, okay, maybe they're killing 4 times that many. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know anymore, and I read in the papers and hear President Bush tell me, but, you know, just taking their numbers and being the devil's advocate here, that's only half as many as are being killed in American hospitals. Now, 4 million Iraqis, there's only 27 million Iraqis over there when this whole thing started. 4 million of them have up and left, so I guess there's 23 million left in the country. 4 million of them moved out. They said, to hell with this. Listen, I don't understand you Iraqis. You Iraqis are twice as safe in Iraq in the middle of the war than you would be in America in an American hospital. And the Iraqis think that Iraq is a dangerous place, and they need to flee, and they're refugees, and so they moved out of Iraq, and they're over in Syria and Jordan and Saudi Arabia. They didn't get the hell out of there. And at that, they are twice as safe, staying right where they are in Iraq, than they would be in a downtown hospital here in Boston, Massachusetts. Isn't that amazing? Furthermore, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, Ted Kennedy and others, who, God bless them, want to save your life. I mean, they want to protect the American people. That's what I hear Bush telling me every day. I'm just here to protect the American people. I've heard him say that about 100 times. It makes me nauseous. This is the President of the United States, who is presiding over Title 50 of the U.S. Code, which provides for spraying protozoa from U.S. Air Force tankers all over America. In fact, they're doing it all over the world now, which causes people to have upper respiratory diseases, and they're telling us it's killing 6,000 a year here in America. Our president's spraying us and killing 6,000 a year. I'm sure it's for a good purpose. I'm sure it's to control global warming or some other real good purpose. They had an Air Force general in Congress the other day, and he's testifying, and some senator asked him about that, and he wouldn't tell. You know, they got a policy of don't ask, don't tell. Well, that's the way it is with that spraying operation. They don't want you to know. So leaving that one aside, the President of the United States, you know, he comes along and he says, we want to protect the American people. God bless Bush, though. He don't want to take my gun away to protect me. He wants to spray me. But the rest of these Democrat liberals over here, they want to protect you by taking your guns away from you. Now, 27,000 people a year are killed. 27,000 a year are killed in America from guns. And so to protect you from gun violence, they don't take all the guns away, like they did for you good people down there in Australia and over in England. take your guns away from, you know, so you can be protected. But I did a little numbers on that, a little numbers game here, and I figured that you're 900 times less likely to be killed by somebody wielding a gun than you are by your family doctor. Let me reword that. You're 900 times more likely to be killed by your family doctor than you are by a gun-wielding nut shooting up the college, you know, like that guy back there in Virginia walked in there, killed 30 people. Oh, my God. Here in America, that made front-page headlines. I mean, we're just talking about that to this day. Now, for 30 people that get killed, and I don't mean to make lightly of it, you know, my daddy died. It took me 3 years to get over my daddy's death, so I understand death. But I think Joe Stalin actually put his finger on the pulse of reality when he said, when one person dies, it's a tragedy. When a million people die, it is a statistic. Nothing more, nothing less. So what we get out of Iraq are statistics. You know, 4 Americans died, 100 Iraqis were killed today in 3 separate bombing attacks. You know, every night, Katie Couric reports 4 Americans are killed. Kids, it doesn't even come up on the radar screen compared to the number of people being killed in America, 821.91 per day, every day. And it's been going on here since at least 1999 when these numbers were first brought forth by President Clinton. Again, your tax dollars at work. Now, I'm not here trying to reform the hospital system. You can forget that. You're not going to reform the hospital system or the Republican Party or the lobbyists on K Street. That isn't going to happen. You're not going to abolish the Federal Reserve or the income tax. Put it out of your mind. What you need to do is to protect yourself from the marauders. You know, by coming on the air and telling you, did you know this? And if you're sitting there saying, cut, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, you can check this out yourself. Shucks, I just went to the internet. It's all published. This isn't top secret. This isn't national security stuff. Hell, it was published and broadcast by your president. Now you know. Now here's another neat little statistic I got from Joel Wallach. Did you know that 40, I think it's 46, it may be 48%, not quite half. Get this in your mind. American medical allopathic doctors, just Joe Sixpack doctor down on Main Street. Half, one half, 46 or 48%, I forgot exactly what he said. Use illegal drugs. Did you know that? Illegal drugs. Now, doctors, you know, write prescriptions. Doctors have lots of legal drugs that they can prescribe for themselves, for crying out loud. But evidently, the legal drugs that come out of Pfizer, Merck, and Glaxo aren't as good as the illegal drugs that come from Mexico, Colombia, and Iraq or Afghanistan. So about half, not quite, but almost half of the medical doctors of America are on some illegal drug. That leaves 54% of the rest of the doctors that are on some kind of legal drug. So it's very likely, in fact, it's probable that your medical doctor is a drug abuser, himself a drug abuser. He's a druggie. Now, the illegal drugs in America kill 6,000 people a year, and our government is spending billions and billions of dollars to protect you from illegal drugs. And they ain't spending a quarter to protect you from the legal drugs. And the legal drugs are killing 100,000 a year. How many is that? Let's take 100,000 here with my famous Sharpie L1197. Let's divide that by 365, and that's killing 273 a day. Hell, that's a 727 loaded with people. They all about 300 people, don't they? That's a 727 crashing every day. And that's just from the guys that they're killing with drugs. So I've been bringing that to your attention. Now, fatal errors. Now, there's another little thing over here about your hospital that you ought to be aware of over here, and it's your intern, you know, the local doctor that's in training over here. Fatal errors are more likely on 24-hour call. Harvard sleep scientists say residents, these are doctor residents, hours, still put patients at risk. Patients are dying at the hands of tired medical residents, according to Harvard sleep scientists, because the work hour limits imposed in 2003 are not preventing sleep deprivation. Their research reveals that first-year medical school graduates who worked 5 shifts of 24 hours or more during a month were 3 times more likely to make a medical error that contributed to a patient's death. Let me read that again. I'm going to underline that. Contributed to a patient's death. Let me put a bracket around that one over there for Frank. The research reveals that first-year medical school graduates, this kid just graduated from medical school, the Harvard Medical School, and this kid's got a degree. This kid's smart. He's got letters after his name now. He goes into work at the hospital. He has to have some practical experience. He goes into work at the hospital. He starts pulling 5 24-hour shifts. How many of you truck drivers work 24 hours a day? How many of you locomotive engineers, you know, work 24 hours a day, 5 days a month? Hell, that's unheard of. That's preposterous. How many of you airline pilots pull 24-hour shifts? You know, get in the airplane, fly for 24 hours, and do that 5 times a month. You know, if somebody said the airline pilot up there, he's working on his second 24-hour shift this month, I mean, you people back there in the cabin would go berserk if you thought the guy at the controls had worked 24 hours straight. Not so with your medical interns. That's routine. These guys do that every day. And this guy who's working these 5 24-hour shifts is more likely to make a fatal error. You know, giving you the wrong drug, putting the decimal in the wrong place, you know, blah, blah, blah. Academic medicine is failing these doctors and their patients by requiring exhausted doctors to work 30-hour marathon shifts, said Charles Sisler. He's an MD, PhD, co-author of the study, and director of sleep medicine at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. The human brain doesn't function correctly when working 30 hours straight. Hell, I don't think I could stay awake for 30 hours. I don't know how these guys can do that. Maybe I could stay awake for 30 hours. I never have tried that. It's kind of a wild new concept, 30 hours straight. David C. Leach, MD, executive director of the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medicine Medical Education, the organization that regulates resident hours and trimming calls, or call hours, or said rather, trimming call hours, further would not necessarily improve patient safety. Dr. Sisler's study has given us a little truth, Dr. Leach said. Residents who work 24 hours self-report that they are prone to making more errors. He has not given us a deeper truth. The problem is more complex than 16 versus 24-hour shifts. The study builds on previous research from Harvard that compared interns who worked an average of 80 hours a week with call periods of 24 hours and longer to interns working 63 hours a week with call limited to 16 hours. The interns working the longer schedule made 36% more serious medical errors. Well, that's just kind of common sense. I don't know why Katie Kirk doesn't report that. Now, here's another study finds widespread resident work hour violations. The Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education disputes these results, stating that a majority of residencies are in compliance. Well, okay, a majority would be 51%, which means that a substantial minority are not in compliance. Now, remember, I told you, I reported to you yesterday. So, listen, if you get somebody going to the hospital, the professionals, the nurses that work in the hospitals, recommend that you have somebody there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the hospital with your child. If it isn't you, lady, then it should be your husband or it should be a teenager or somebody. To ask questions and monitor, just being there makes everybody that comes into the room alert. And what that does is it reduces the chances for medical error because, you know, if they've got one of these automatic machines that's dispensing the drug into your loved one's arm. See, they got this bag up on this pole. And it's hooked up to a computer, and it automatically, every hour, it drops in a couple of drops of this drug. Now, you know, if perchance somebody makes an error, and it's supposed to be, you know, 3 milligrams per hour, but they put the decimal in the wrong place, they might be getting 30 milligrams an hour. The difference between 3 and 30 is a bunch. And, you know, we're talking about drugs, we're talking about a little bit, you know, is good, and a whole lot will kill you. And so that happens every once in a while, and that's just one of the hazards. There's literally dozens of these hazards that can go on. A little later on, I'll tell you about washing your hands. See, back in the last century, there was some guy whose name I can't pronounce. I mean, he's got three names here, and he's from Austria, and there's nobody that can pronounce his name. But he was working in a hospital. He's a doctor, you know. He's working in a hospital over in Austria. And he notices that women who come to the hospital to have a baby are dying at a much higher rate than women who are having their babies at home. See, back in Exodus chapter 1, you read about the midwives, you know, that are going out and they're delivering Israelite babies. And of course, today, having a baby is a modern medical trauma. Now, back in the olden days, it was a natural bodily function, you know, like going to the bathroom. And these women would just squat down and they would have a baby and that was the end of it. And they didn't have any problems. But this doctor, he noticed that when women went to the hospital, their babies were dying and the women were dying. And so he got to thinking about that a little bit. And so he came up to a conclusion that it was dirty hands doing it. See, the doctors would go into the morgue, and they got a dead body in there. This guy died from bubonic plague or something, you know, and so they're in there working on this guy. And they come out of there, out of the morgue, and they've done an autopsy on a guy with bubonic plague or AIDS or, you know, or hepatitis or something like that. And so then they would then go into the maternity ward, and they'd start working with these women, and they'd start handling them, you know. They spread your legs, babe, and they'd start handling, you know, their vital parts. And they were spreading the disease germs from these dead people to the live mothers in there. And then, of course, the babies would die and the mothers would die. And so this guy came up with a revolutionary new idea. It was called wash your hands. Wash your hands. It wasn't high tech. I mean, you know, you didn't have to go to the Harvard Medical School to figure this out or to learn this. Just go wash your hands. My granny used to do that. But my granny was a little more thorough than that. She'd make me wash my wrists and arms and elbows and neck and ears and... Oh, she was a nut. My granny was a nut. She wanted your whole body clean before you came to the table to eat, for crying out loud. I don't know where she got that. Maybe she went to medical school. But anyway, this doctor, he was hounded out of the medical profession for suggesting that these doctors wash their hands. Did you know that 50% of the medical profession today, this is 2007 as I'm making my report, 50%, it's actually a little more than that, they said here in the report, don't wash their hands between patients. Now, what that means is the reason that 75,000 people a year are dying from hospital-induced infections in the United States of America is because 50% of the doctors and nurses, or the cleaning ladies or scrub ladies or whatever, they go into a room and there's this sick people. You know, the only people that are in the hospital now are sick. Listen, boys and girls, the guy next door to you is sick. That's why he's in the hospital. And so the doctor goes into that guy, and let's say he's got hepatitis, and he goes in there and he pokes around on his bodily orifices. Doctors are prone to do that, you know, bend over and spread your cheeks. And then the doctor comes out of there and he comes into your room, but he doesn't wash his hands in between. Kind of like the problem I had, you know, when the guy came out of the morgue after doing an autopsy back in the 1800s, back in the 19th century, and then didn't wash his hands. He came into the maternity room and then he spread those disease germs to these new mothers and killed a bunch of them. And so they woke up and they said, you got to wash your hands. Well, now, you know, my granny had the same problem with me. So she had to tell me every day, wash your hands. You know, when I was 5 years old, you know, my memory didn't work very long. You know, last night I could remember wash your hands because granny reminded me. And then, you know, but that was 24 hours ago. So now we're coming into dinner again. And granny says, did you wash your hands, little Georgie? And I, no, because I wanted to come in and eat with my dirty hands and spread disease all over the dinner table. And granny wouldn't allow that. She didn't want me spreading my disease and dirty germs all over the dinner table and spreading it to her and granddad and everybody else. And so she made me go wash my hands. It's worse than that. Now, remember, she made me wash my wrists, arms, elbows, neck, and ears. Now, how many diseases are spread by dirty ears at the dinner table? I don't know, but my granny made sure that there was no disease germ spread by dirty ears at the Gordon dinner table. I'll tell you that, just in case you're wondering. So the study finds widespread resident work hour violations. Okay, so the doc over here, he's tired and he killed you by giving you the wrong drug, too much of it, or makes some medical mistake. But then the same doc who went to college, for crying out loud, didn't even learn to wash his damn hands. And now he goes around, he's an intern now, and he's running around, and it's not just the interns, it's the brain surgeons doing it too, you know. The brain surgeons and the interns and the nurses and the other medical staff, half of them, 50% plus, aren't washing their hands between patients, between rooms in the hospitals, and they kill 75,000 a year doing that. How many is that? 75,000 divided by 365 days. That's 205 a day. That's two 737s crashing every day, boys and girls. Two of the little twin-engine 737s haul 100 people each, two of them a day, 14 a week, 60 a month. That's a bunch. 365 times 2 is 730 a year. Just thought I'd share that one with you. Let me share something else with you here. And that is, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage as well. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at area code 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that these authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors, not all, but most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, or they may be political, or they're religious, or they're economic, or they're sectarian, or they're racial, or they're ethnic partisans. And they have a viewpoint. And those viewpoints that those people hold are not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. And that, of course, causes hard feelings if we don't endorse everything everybody believes. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station, but they should. I got that line from Rush Limbaugh, but they should. I like that line. I didn't think of it, but Rush did. Now, for more information about the law or an editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just call us, you know, on the email. Send us an email. Or you can call us direct, which we prefer. If you call us direct here on the telephone, the number is 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about hospitals. Hospitals. Now, these hospitals produce miracles. I mean, when you can transplant somebody's lung out of one guy over here who's dead, move it, you know, across the country from Los Angeles to Boston and stick it into somebody else, and that guy gets up and walks out of the hospital, that's a miracle. That's saying something. And modern American medicine can do that, and they can do more than that. But they can also kill you. They can kill you. And they can kill you in some pretty benign ways. You know, you go in here and you have your heart transplant or your liver transplant or something like that, and then you die from a crummy infection because some guy didn't wash his hands. Or because some intern over here, you know, nice guy, nice young lady, just studying to be a doctor so that they can transplant lungs from people that died in Los Angeles into people that are still alive in Boston, didn't wash their hands, or because they were working, you know, for 30 hours straight, and they made a mistake, and they gave you the wrong drug or too much of it, and they killed you in the process. So I reported to you yesterday, you know, a couple of nurses said, you know, you need to have somebody there 24/7 in the patient's room watching the nurses and the doctors and asking questions. You know, here's what we were doing. Our boy was in the hospital. You know, he's a bad hip, you know. He's in the hospital here a month ago or so. And so my wife is in the hospital with him. And so the nurse would come in and she'd say, well, here's your pill. And so my wife would say, what is that? Well, it's his medication. What is that medication? Well, it's and she'd say, well, and is that on the chart? And the nurse would look on the chart and say, well, yes, it's right here. Now, are you sure that's the right drug? And she said, well, I got it out of the bottle myself. Well, okay. Well, go ahead and give it to him. And so she'd give him that pill, and then she'd leave the room. You can rest assured that nurse went back to the nurse's station and said, who's that old hag over there in Dirk's room? I mean, I walked in there to give Dirk his pill, and she was questioning me, and she made me look on the chart. And then some other, yeah, she's an old battle axe. That's his mother. Well, that old battle axe, she's over there hovering over him like an old mother hen. And so the word spreads around the floor, you know. There's this old battle axe over there in Dirk's room, and you got to watch out for her. She's just meaner than cat dirt. But, you know, he went in there and he came out, and he didn't come out with an infection. He came out alive. They didn't give him the wrong drugs. We didn't have to sue the hospital for wrongful death. You know, it was a bad event. It cost a lot of money, but, you know, we got through it. And so I'm just passing that on to you. You know, it's, you know, people, they call here and they say, well, my husband went to the hospital, had bypass surgery, and he didn't come out alive. Yeah, that's pretty common. That's right. It happens. In fact, it happens 821 times a day, every day, day in, day out here in America. That's why I mentioned to you, I said, you know, you got these politicians, and they're just real excited about saving you from some gun-toting guy that's going to kill you over here in the university. But, hey, listen, they only kill 27,000 people a year here in this country. I mean, murderers, guys that are running around with guns on college campuses shooting people at random, are only killing 27,000 a year. Now, you know, I admit that's a bunch. 27,000 people, you know, it's just a statistic. That's as many people as live in Eureka, California. That's like wiping out Eureka, California every year from gun violence here in the United States. But at that, even at that, you're 900 times safer on your college campus with a lunatic running around with a gun shooting 30 people than you are in your doctor's office or in the hospital. 900 times safer. Huh, wonder how much safer you are in Baghdad. Let's see. Let's see, I got some numbers here. I figured that over in Baghdad, the Iraq war over there, American casualties total about 40,000. Now, that's not just 40,000 dead. See, they killed 3,000, but they crippled up a bunch more. I mean, these roadside bombs go off, but they don't kill everybody. See, they just blow their arms and legs off. Well, if you've been in Iraq and you get your leg blown off, that was a bad break. That's a bad break. And you're going to miss that leg. But hey, listen, your chances of being killed by a doctor over here in the United States of America in your local hospital was much greater than your chances of getting killed or losing your leg in Iraq. Did you know that? So while you were in Iraq, you were safer there than you were here in America. You guys that are over in Iraq, you ought to be praying every day for your wives and mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers that God will protect them from the local hospital intern, medical doctor, nurse, or the local clinic, because they're much more likely. How much more likely? Well, let's see. We're killing 821 a day here in America, but we're only killing 4 over in Iraq. So let's plug in 821 and divide that by 4. And that's 205. So you're 205 times more likely to be killed in an American hospital than you are of being killed in Iraq. Got that? Now, there's injuries that go on here in America, and we're estimating that out of 37 million people that go into our hospitals every year, 2 million of them are injured. They're not necessarily killed, but they're injured in the hospital. Injured. My Aunt Bessie was injured in the hospital. I never was. I didn't get injured in the hospital, and I didn't get killed in the hospital yet, but then I stay away from them, and I gave you an article here the other day. If you can stay out of the hospital, oh my God, by all means do so. If you can stay out, stay out. That's what the professionals recommend. Now, if you have to go to the hospital, which typically, you know, for hip replacement, heart transplant, brain surgery, you got to go to the hospital. You got to have somebody there. You got to have a second. It's almost like a duel. You know, you got to have a second there to hold your coat. You want to have an old battle axe, you know, there like my wife in the hospital room questioning the nurse. The nurse would come in and she'd poke on that computer and she'd say, "What have you done?" "Well, I'm poking on the computer." "What are you poking?" "I'm poking in his medical needs here, his drugs." "Oh, how much drugs does he get?" "Oh, he gets a little morphine every hour." "How much morphine does he get every hour?" "Well, he gets this amount." "Is that on his chart?" "Oh, yeah, it's right here on the chart." "Have you got the decimal in the right place?" "Oh, yeah, decimal's in the right place." "Are you alert? Have you been working 30 hours straight on this shift? Have you been pulling two shifts, lady?" You know, even if you're pulling two shifts and you got some old battle axe over there in the room asking all these questions, it jolts this person to full 100% alert. Well, you know, as close to it as you can get. It's better than letting this guy come in here half asleep, you know, start poking numbers, you know, on the computer that's poking morphine into your kid's arm. All right. So now these interns continue to work overly long shifts, the study finds. Now, that intern that's working on you at the hospital may be so sleep deprived. His or her performance is no better than that of a drunk. Did you get that, kids? The intern who's coming in here, well-meaning young man that he is, future brilliant brain surgeon that he will become, is working 80 hours a week and pulling five shifts of 24 hours. And when he comes in there, that sleep deprived, he's working at the same level as a drunk. No, just picture this. Do you want some drunk coming in there poking numbers onto that computer that's going to be dispensing the morphine into your IV drip? Or do you want this guy to be sober? Although that's pretty hard to do because 50% of the doctors, you know, are either drunks or they're on illegal drugs. I don't know if you knew that or not, but alcoholism and drug abuse among medical doctors is a very serious problem. In fact, I'm going to give you a number here. There's a guy by the name of Joel Wallach. You'll love this guy. Joel Wallach. Spelled W-A-L-L-A-C-H, Joel, J-O-E-L. He's got a phone number. It's 800-755-4656. And he's an old-timey veterinarian, And he later on went to medical school and he became a full-fledged doctor. So now he's one of them. And so he's the guy that reported dead doctors don't lie. You'll love this tape. Dead doctors don't lie. And he reports that medical doctors, you know, that's the guy that's working on you there in the hospital, the allopathic medical doctor, the same guy that he's one of. Did you know that these medical doctors die on average at age 58? I mean, yeah, the guy who is treating you for all of your diseases, he dies himself at age 58. Now, the average person in America dies at age 75 and a half. Medical doctors, they die on average at age 58. So he put out this tape. It's called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. He said doctors have the poorest health of any group in the country. They have the highest incidence of things like, well, I shouldn't say highest, but a very high rate of alcoholism, suicide, and drug abuse. I don't know exactly where they rank, but they're very high. Now, you'd think that a medical doctor would have no drug abuse at all, zero. He'd have no alcoholism. After all, he's a paid professional. He's there to help alcoholics get off booze. He's there to help drug addicts, you know, get off drugs, give them methadone instead of heroin. I mean, that's what medical doctors are there to do. And we find out that these medical doctors are victims of their own success. Well, okay. Let me give you that number again, in case you didn't get it there. Let me flip back over here. Joel Wallach, spelled J-O-E-L-W-A-L-L-A-C-H. I don't have his address. It's 1-800. It's an 800 number, toll-free, 755-4656, and tell him you want dead doctors don't lie. Dead doctors don't lie. Get a copy of it. God, you'll be glad you did. Then he puts out a number of books. I've reviewed two or three of his books over the years here. If you go to our archives, I don't know the exact name and number, but you know, just kind of scroll down, take a look, and you'll see Joel Wallach, or you'll see you know, something on health. Just pay attention to the health sections in our archives. And I've done a number of his books, reviewed them. Said, hey, listen, did you know this? And most people say, no, I didn't know that. Well, no, you do. Now you're smarter than you were when you first heard this program. So you got to watch out for these interns. Now, they mean well. I'm not criticizing the interns, and I don't know whether working, you know, 80-hour weeks is good or bad. You know, the average factory worker, he's working about 32 or 33 hours a week. I mean, the guy that's putting your car together, the guy that's building your computer, he's working 30 hours a week. The guy that's working on your body, giving you a lung transplant or a Roto-Rooter job in the hospital, he's working 80. Sometimes 24 to 30 hours straight. This guy has the same mental acumen as a drunk when he comes into your hospital room to dispense the IV drugs. Somehow or another, Americans don't see that as a problem. But my God, don't let an airline pilot get on, or a truck driver, or a locomotive engineer get in here that hasn't had at least 8 hours sleep over the last 24. I don't know, kids. And how many locomotive engineers are killing very many people? I mean, you know, how many airline pilots are killing people because they're bombed out of their minds on drugs or something, huh? I mean, my God, you know, airline pilots have to have urine tests all the time. And truck drivers are always checking them, you know, finding out, hey, you've been smoking a little ragweed over there, boy. You know, but they don't do that with doctors, nurses. Now, hell, that guy, he can be as high as a kite and coming into your room, barely able to stand up, been working for 30 hours. And be poking the numbers onto your computers, sticking a little morphine into your arm. Earlier surveys of a variety of medical centers found that sleepy doctors in training endangered both patients and themselves. To cut off federal attempts to solve this serious problem by legislation, the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education in 2003 put a cap on hours that residents and interns training to be medical doctors can work. Interns are those in the first year of training. The rules limited shifts to a maximum of 30 consecutive hours and no more than 80 hours a week. In addition, residents and interns must have one day off in every seven. Oh, my God. Hey, listen, why don't you truck drivers go into the Congress and tell them, we want new work rules. We want to be able to drive our trucks no more than 80 hours a week with a maximum of 30 consecutive hours at the wheel. Why don't you airline pilots go into the Congress and tell them, hey, listen, we got to have new work rules, something like the doctors have, you know, in the hospitals, especially interns, especially you new pilots, especially you guys, you know, flying for your very first, second, or third time. We want you guys working 80 hours a week. Hell, I'd rather some old pilot that's been flying airplanes, you know, for the last 30 years. Work 30 hours consecutively and then fly me to Hawaii. Then some snot-nosed punk, you know, that's just gotten out of flight school, and he's going to, huh? Have we taken leave of our senses here, kids? Anyway, that's, and the Congress went along with it. They said, well, that sounds like a pretty good plan to us. Sounds like self-regulation. So the council developed the duty hour standards out of concern for the effects of excessive resident work hours on patients and residents' safety. They did this because they're real concerned about you folks out there. Oh, my God, give me a break, would you? I mean, we talk about insanity, you know, from time to time. I don't know who came up with this idea over here, but this guy is Looney Tunes. This guy belongs in a mental hospital, for crying out loud. Let me cover this one for you again. Listen, do you believe, honest to God, kids, that your airline pilot could work 80 hours a week flying airplanes? Do you believe that? Do you believe a truck driver can work 80 hours a week? Do you believe that an airline pilot, a locomotive engineer, or a truck driver could work 30 consecutive hours? And you got doctors and interns and people that are dispensing deadly medicines. And in the process, of course, because of this practice over here, they're killing 300,000 people a year in this country. You people wouldn't sit still for that, you know, with airline pilots, truck drivers, and locomotive engineers, but you don't think anything about that, you know, having some snot-nosed intern just got out of college, and he's over here working in the hospital, pushing the buttons over here that are putting the morphine into your IV drip. I don't know, kids, you know, if that's what you want, you know, get after it. But for our part over here, we're going to stay the hell out of the hospital, and if we have to go in there, and from time to time you may have to. I mean, that's just, you know, it's life. It's the way life is. From time to time, maybe you'll find yourself in Baghdad. You know, soldiers, you know, have to face that. Sometimes you don't get easy duty, you know, up on the DMZ in Korea. Maybe you got to go to Baghdad. But hey, listen, you guys in Baghdad are safer than your mothers and fathers and wives and sweethearts and children are in the United States. Always remember that. You're safer in Baghdad than you are in your local hospital. And yet these long shifts persist, and they're not going to change that. And I'm not here to advocate that they change it. I'm just telling you, you got to send a battle axe into the hospital to keep those guys awake, so that when they come into your loved one's room, you know, you can point out to them, hey, wake up, snap to, the old battle axe is here. Overly tired interns working in hospitals make mistakes that endanger themselves as well as patients. That's a new Harvard study. Long hours and little sleep. I've got four articles here on just this one subject alone. Long hours and sleep deprivation. In the skin injury report, Sessler and his colleagues note that factors contributing to fatigue include out-of-sync daily rhythm, sleep deprivation, and sleep inertia. During the latter half of the night and early morning, emulative sleep deprivation converges with misalignment of daily rhythms to create a critical zone of vulnerability during extended durations of wakefulness. Adding to that may be sleep inertia, the familiar grogginess that occurs immediately on awakening. Interns typically attempt to sleep during their overnight work shifts but are often awakened when patients need to be treated. The researchers pointed this out. In drawing blood and assisting in surgery or childbirth when sleep deprived is not an ideal situation for either the patient or the intern. The researchers end their report with a plea to their medical colleagues to reduce intern and resident working hours and to implement safety measures to combat fatigue and to reduce risks to all involved. Now, you haven't heard this from Katie Couric because it's being managed by the news media. When an airplane crashes, they're right there to report on it. When people die in the hospital, or when you have a problem over here like 130,000 people a year being killed by iatrogenic disease, doctor-induced disease, they don't report on that. And of course, if they don't report, you don't know. And if you don't know, then you don't care. And if you don't care, then they can continue on. Now, for some reason, they cared about airline pilots and how long they worked and how awake they were. They're concerned about, I remember there was a couple of airline pilots that were having some drinks, you know, before they took their flight and they were legally drunk. And they fired both of them. Hell, half of the doctors working in the hospitals are drunk or on drugs when they come into your room. That's normal. That's accepted. That is expected. So, you know, if you possibly can, I think I'd be looking for a Mormon doctor. You know, stop and think now. Mormons, you know, typically don't drink, don't smoke, and they don't chase wild women. Now, if you could find a Mormon doctor, you know, you'd probably be safer. He probably would be less likely to be on drugs or booze than the average Catholic or Protestant doctor. I just thought I'd throw that out for you. So, you know, if you're looking for a doctor, you might walk in and say, hey, by the way, are you a Mormon? Yeah, I'm a Mormon. Oh, good, good. And you're less likely. Now, that doesn't mean that that Mormon guy isn't over there, you know, working 80-hour weeks and 30-hour shifts, but at least he'll be doing so sober. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. And The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's about up. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.